Communications Complex. Aditi picked at the dinner she had ordered, her attention focused on the viewer built into the wall of the living room where she sat. Perhaps this underground complex is shielded too heavily for my call to get through, she worried. She knew that the communicator in her brain operated on dark energy, completely different from the electromagnetic frequencies used on Earth. But still, she feared.
Hello, Aditi.
Adri's face, lined with age, smiled gently at her. She gushed out a relieved sigh. In the three-dimensional viewer, Adri appeared to be walking along the stone path that ran along the perimeter of their city on New Earth, out in the open on a bright, cloudless day. He wore a floor-length robe of forest green, with fine golden traceries bedecking it. Before she could say anything, Adri suggested,
"Perhaps you had better talk to me, and tell me what has happened to you since we last spoke. From your latest message, I presume that you are alone. They have separated you from Jordan?"
As swiftly and concisely as she could, Aditi explained what was happening to her and Jordan. She tried to keep her voice calm, tried to recite only the facts, but she found herself trembling with emotion, fear, resentment, even anger. By the time she was finished, she felt weary, drained. The viewer went blank. She knew it would take about an hour for her words to reach Adri and his reply to return to her. She went to the lavatory, showered, and prepared for sleep, thinking that Castiglione could walk into her apartment whenever he chose to. Aditi wondered what she would do if he chose to barge in on her at this time of night. By the time she returned to the sitting room, Adri's three-dimensional image was once again in the viewer. The old man had sat himself down on one of the stone benches that lined the curved perimeter walkway, his hands clasped on his lap. Once he saw that Aditi was looking at him, he shook his head slightly.
"The humans must be very afraid of you," he said, "to keep you isolated. I presume that they understand you can contact me whenever you wish."
Aditi nodded, even though she knew that Adri would not see her gesture for an hour. Continuing unperturbed, Adri said,
"We must not lose sight of the major objectives, to save as many of the intelligent civilizations as we can, and to save Earth itself and the other human settlements in Earth's system." "But how can we do that if Earth's leaders refuse to act?" Aditi wondered silently. "It would seem," Adri went on, "that your task is to convince Earth's leaders to act without delay. But it is very difficult to make them see the need for prompt action. They are still steeped in their ancient ways, still distrustful of strangers, still eager to seek advantages that will promote their own interests."
Adri slowly rose to his feet.
"We must find a way to make them see the need to protect themselves and the other intelligent species that are in danger. Quite frankly, Aditi, I don't know how to do that. You are there, on the scene, among them. You must find the way. You and Jordan together." "But we're not together," Aditi blurted. "They've separated us." "I wish I could help you," Adri continued. "If I think of anything that might be helpful, I will contact you. In the meantime, you must act as wisely as you can."
The viewer went dark. Aditi sat in the underground apartment, alone. Jordan walked along the Ramblas, enjoying his newfound freedom, even though he half expected a team of security agents to surround him at any moment. "What to do?" he asked himself repeatedly. "Where can I go?" The Ramblas was crowded with people, even though it was nearing midnight. Restaurants and bars were open, brightly lit. Crowds clustered outside theaters that offered everything from flamenco dancers to historical dramas. "Aditi," Jordan said to himself. "Where is Aditi? What have they done with her?" "I need help," he knew. The only person he could think of who might be willing to help him was Mitchell Thornberry. But Mitch is in Chicago, Jordan knew. "I need help here, right now." Then he remembered Professor Rudaki. "Maybe he'd be willing to help me. He wasn't much help when I phoned him earlier, but who else can I turn to?" Jordan found a curbside bench that was occupied only by a pair of youngsters who seemed oblivious to everyone and everything except each other. He sat at the other end of the bench and wondered how he could locate Rudaki's address. "I can't risk calling him, or even using my phone to find his address," Jordan reasoned. "Halleck's people probably monitor all communications, and they'll pinpoint my location immediately." With some trepidation, he said in Spanish to the young couple on the other end of the bench, "Excuse me, please. Could you kindly help me?" The two youngsters looked surprised, shocked almost, to be pulled out of their private universe. Trying to appear befuddled, Jordan said, "I can't get my communicator to function properly. Could you please find an address for me?" The young man smiled. Jordan thought, "In his eyes, I must seem like a dotty old coot."
"Certainly, sir," the lad said.
Within less than a minute, the youngster found Rudaki's address and even showed Jordan a street map of how to get there. Too far to walk, Jordan realized.
"A million thanks," he said as he got up from the bench.
"It's nothing," said the young man, turning back to his young woman.
Jordan walked away and looked down the crowded avenue for a taxi. "No cash, and I cannot use a credit chip." With a shake of his head and an almost rueful little grin, Jordan told himself, "Imitate the action of the tiger. Be bold, display no doubts." A confident attitude had helped him in other scrapes all those years ago, when he had been a diplomat sent to trouble spots around the world. He waved to an approaching taxi. It glided to curbside, and Jordan ducked into it. It was a tiny vehicle with only two seats. No human driver, the cab was automated. Jordan smiled to himself. "At least I won't cheat a working man out of his fare." He directed the cab to within 5 blocks of Rudaki's address. It was a quiet suburban area, hardly any traffic. The sidewalks were lined with trees and empty of pedestrians. A nice, peaceful, upscale residential neighborhood, Jordan thought. Good. When he tried to get out, though, he found that the taxi's door would not unlock. "The fare is $12 international, said the synthesized voice from the cab's dashboard speaker in Spanish. "I'm afraid I don't have any money with me," Jordan replied in English. Switching to English, the non-human voice replied, "The fare is $12 international. "I don't have any money with me," Jordan repeated. "This vehicle is equipped to accept credit charges?"
"No credit chip, either."
For several moments, the cab remained silent. Jordan tried both doors, still locked. Then a distinctly nettled woman's voice issued from the speaker grill.
"You don't have a credit chip?"
"I'm afraid not."
"Remain in the cab, then. I am dispatching a security car to take care of you. They'll be with you in a few minutes."
Jordan glanced around the cab's interior. There was a transparent plastic panel in the roof marked Emergencia. "Well," he said to himself, "this is an emergency if there ever was one." Wondering if the cab was equipped with a security camera, he reached up and flicked the latch of the emergency panel. A shrill warning whistle erupted. Quickly, Jordan pushed the panel open, then stood up and climbed out of the cab. As he dropped down onto the street, he heard the woman's voice over the wail of the alarm.
"The security car will be with you in less than a minute. Please remain seated."
"Not bloody likely," Jordan said to himself as he hurried away from the taxi. He saw a pair of headlights approaching from 2 blocks up the otherwise empty street, so he turned at the corner. As he slipped behind one of the curbside trees, the gray unmarked sedan went past him and pulled to a stop behind the taxi. Jordan walked as fast as he could toward Rudaki's house.